Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The oil keeps gushing in the Gulf. Another setback yesterday for efforts to stop, to capture, to contain the gusher. But there's no letup in the anger Americans feel about the unending disaster. BP seems incapable of stopping the nightmare that it created, and the government, now launching civil and criminal investigations, has not found a solution. But the hunger for a fix is great. This hour on Point, we're looking for drastic measures for anything that might stop the oil. You can join the conversation. What could we do that we haven't done to rein in this catastrophe? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will talk in this hour with former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, who's calling for a temporary government takeover of BP. But joining us first, from Austin, Texas, Tad Patzick, Chairman of the Petroleum and Geosystems Engineering Department at the University of Texas at Austin. We've got a lot of questions for him. Tad, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And from San Francisco, Antonia Yuhas, Energy and Corporate Policy Analyst at Global Exchange. It's a human rights organization where she's director of the Chevron program, keeping a close tabs on that oil giant. She's author of The Tyranny of Oil. She was in Louisiana this week to survey the damage from the BP oil spill. Antonia, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tad Patzick, take us in here. We've asked for suggestions and have a lot from our listeners. Tens of thousands of Americans have given suggestions on, you know, suggestion lines and blogs around the country. And still, we don't have an answer here. We want to just dive in and see what might work. Why aren't we trying some other things? One that caught my eye, Professor Patzick, was from the former president of Shell Oil. This is John Hofmeister. And he said that BP has been resisting ideas that have worked. For example, Saudi Arabia put out a fleet of supertankers used to suck up an even larger spill in the 1990s. Could that have worked? Why don't we see a fleet of supertankers vacuuming up, I guess, and cleaning, separating oil from water in the Gulf of Mexico, Professor?
Well, first of all, you probably would want to have a lot of oil on top of sand or very shallow water, so high oil density, for the super tanker to be filled mostly with oil, not water.
Mm-hmm.
The spill is very dispersed, and so it's kind of difficult to suck in, you know, let's say 90% of water and 10% or less oil without separating it. But there are other solutions. The one that got my attention was proposed by Robert Penjik, an adjunct instructor in physics and astronomy at Mount Union University in Alliance, Ohio. And he essentially proposed a further development of the Norwegian idea to have, submersed very large umbrellas, sort of like vacuum cleaners, that would suck in water and oil before it hits the surface.
In other words, near the point of the gusher,
above or downstream, if there is a current, of the point of gusher, and the calculations can be made how the plume of oil propagates in the water and gradually rises.
How did that work for Norway? Did it capture a large percentage of the oil?
Well, Norway has done calculations and some trials of predicting the spill of oil from what was an equivalent of a burst submersed pipe and a blowout of well. And the predictions of the shape of the plume were very good, very accurate. And so from that, Mr. Penjik has concluded, and I agree, that it should be possible to construct these sort of negative buoyancy but relatively lightweight systems that would suck in oil and water, refocus the plume by essentially sucking it in, and then separate oil from water by various measures, cyclone separators, on the surface ships.
We'll ask why that's not going on already. We'll look at a lot more ideas and what is going on there as well. Antonia Yuhas, you have written very critically about the oil industry. I mean, it's right there in the title of your book, The Tyranny of oil. Do you trust that BP is doing, has done, will do everything that could be done? Or are there reasons that it might drag its feet or not be open to some alternatives?
Well, there's two pieces to this. I mean, first, the biggest problem that we're facing right now is a lack of transparency and a lack of trust. BP has not earned our trust. It has misled, lowballed, denied throughout this process. It lost our trust through a series of its, its behavior and operations in the United States for years predating this incident, and it's also been utterly non-transparent in this process. We don't know why they're trying what they're trying, why they're not trying what they're trying, and as I said, they have not earned our trust.
So would you look for a technical solution, or is it a corporate or a takeover solution? We'll hear more about that from Robert Reich, but is it going after BP that's the answer here? Does that really fix it?
There's the short-term problem and the long-term problem. Mm-hmm. In the short term, I absolutely support Robert Reich's a decision that we need to federalize this entire process in the Gulf, and that the federal government needs to be ultimately in charge, ultimately responsible for everything that's taking place right now.
President Obama says he is. He says the buck stops with him, but they've got the expertise.
They have the expertise, but they also have the decision-making authority. The buck stops with him, but there's no legal basis for that. There's no legal authority. So putting essentially the operations in the Gulf in federal receivership, so the federal government actually owns and is responsible for everything that is taking place in the Gulf right now is absolutely where we need to be so that we can open up the oversight, the dialogue, bring in the local communities that have significantly greater expertise, researchers with greater expertise on what needs to happen in terms of protecting their coastal areas, protecting their waterways. But in terms of the technology for stopping the gusher, it's very important that listeners know this has never happened before. And we shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Well, what do you mean it hasn't happened before? We've heard about other blowouts, even in the Gulf of Mexico.
Not this deep and not to this extent. Deep water drilling is 1,000 feet below the water surface.
And this is 5,000.
Ultra deep is 5,000, right?
Yes.
Then the hole is 13,000 feet deeper than that.
So we're way down there. Tad Patzik, I hear you interjecting.
Yes, if I may sort of put a little correction. There are 50,000 wells in the U.S. outer continental shelf, of which more than 2,000 were in over 1,000 feet of water, and 700 were in greater than 5,000 feet.
I don't think
water.
That conflicts with what Antonio said, but only one is blown out here. Do you think BP's done everything that could be done, Professor Patzik? Are they falling far short? Has it been a reasonable technical response?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that more transparency would be very helpful. For example, posting the data as they are acquired by BP on some sort of a clearing website would be very helpful.
Why do you think they're not doing that? Are they hiding something?
No, I don't think so, because the data are transmitted now to the panel of government experts, which, in fact, I think as of today's news on NPR has a veto power over decisions made by BP.
To the government, but we've got a whole country that would like to put its brains to
work
right.
On this thing. That's right. So what I'm trying to suggest that it would be very helpful if BP were able to put all the data just as a video feed in public domain and let just people see what's out there.
Let me ask you, we've got suggestions pouring in here. One, it's on the front page of the New York Times today, but our listener is also thinking about an explosion. Could be nuclear, could not be. But the idea that Soviets used it in the past, that a nuclear explosion might create a big glass plug in effect far underground or some other kind of explosion, is there an explosive answer to this that might collapse the well in a way that would seal it and we'd be done?
Yeah. No, this is not a movie. And I would like
Soviet
to
Union wasn't a movie. It was fact, and four out of five times we read, it worked.
No, it hasn't. It actually was a terrible disaster, which did not produce any oil, glassified the rock and fractured it and caused all kinds of problems, including radioactivity seeping into water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, there are probably by now multiple subsurface leaks, or at least one subsurface leak from that well into the underlying formation.
Mm-hmm.
And chances of stopping that leak with an explosion, nuclear or not, are probably rather small. And so we're not going to prevent the problem of oil seepage into the other underground formation. In fact, I think the last thing anybody wants to do is to have an explosion, nuclear or not.
What about a bigger pipe? I know they have had trouble cutting off this kink part of the riser, the pipe down there right now, but we've got another suggestion here that basically says, look, why don't we just slip a bigger pipe over the existing pipe and begin to suck it up into a tanker? Sounds simple.
Right. Well, there are many. There's 38,000 recommendations from various sources that have come, to the public domain, and many of them, in fact, make, sense to various degrees. But each one of them has to be considered very carefully, and then analyzed as to how it can be implemented, with 150 atmospheres of pressure under very harsh and adverse conditions.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about drastic measures in the Gulf of Mexico and a country desperate to find a way to fix the spill. Tad Patzik joins us. He is in the Petroleum and Geosystems Engineering Department, chairman there at the University of Texas at Austin. And Antonia Yuhas joins us from San Francisco. She's author of The Tyranny of Oil, the World's Most Powerful Industry, and What We Must Do to Stop It. She was just in Louisiana this week looking at the damage from the BP oil spill. You can join the conversation this hour. How do you see this? If it's a national emergency, who should lead the charge to respond? The oil company, the government, Titanic director James Cameron, Kevin Costner? We know it's not a movie, but there are a lot of suggestions out there. What's your drastic measure suggestion for stopping the oil? And indeed, James Cameron talking about it this week. He's done a lot of deep sea work with his movie work. He said he made an offer to help to BP, but was turned down and has not yet spoken with government officials. Here he is at a technology conference yesterday.
Over the last few weeks, I've watched, as we all have, with growing sort of horror and heartache, watching what's happening in the Gulf and thinking those morons don't know what they're doing, of course, as we all do, watching what we're getting on the media. And I thought, wait a minute, I know a lot of smart people in deep submergence. Yes, they don't drill for oil, but they operate all kinds of vehicles, all kinds of electronic optical fiber systems, and have all the remote manipulators and so on. And most importantly, they know the engineering that it requires.
James Cameron there, lots of people with ideas who would like to be helpful if they could, if there's some better way than what has so far been a string of failures in trying to stop this. Joining us right now from Berkeley, California, Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under President Clinton. He's professor of public policy now, author of Super Capitalism. Bob Reich, thanks for joining us. You're saying let's take BP into receivership. What exactly do you want to do?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, it's simply untenable for a company, a for-profit company answerable to its shareholders, and in addition, a for-profit company answerable to shareholders that has proved to be negligent over and over again, to be in charge of stopping up a well and basically stopping a national emergency, a huge danger to the public. So I've said, by all means, let's use BP's expertise. Let's use their resources.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure that all of their expertise and all of their resources are being used appropriately to stop up this well. But the president has got to take control. He's got to be in charge. This is a national emergency.
What does that mean exactly, take control, be in charge? What are you suggesting?
Well, it means a temporary receivership. It means that this is not forever. This is not the entire BP global operation. I don't think we have legal authority for that. But just like if a nuclear reactor was melting down town, you know, held by a utility that was a publicly held utility, the government would take it over.
In the Gulf of Mexico, in the United States, like how high up the food chain?
The U.S. Subsidiary of BP would be taken over. Otherwise, Tom, we have no way of knowing that every possible resource is being used to stop the leak, that in fact, we're getting accurate information that BP is accurately weighing the risks and benefits to the public of everything it does, such as using dispersants. The government is directly answerable to the people. Whether you trust the government or not, whether you trust BP or not, this is not a matter of trust. This is a matter of just responsibility. BP is responsible to its shareholders, first and foremost.
Not to the public, you're saying.
Not to the public, and that's the way corporations are organized.
Right. I mean, James Carville says, you know, tell BP I'm your daddy. Is this just satisfying that urge, or does it actually get us to a solution, Bob?
Well, I think not only does it get us to a solution, because we don't know. I mean, for example, there are rumors that BP has about 24 ships in the Gulf that conceivably could be used for siphoning off all of this oil. It would be very, very expensive. It would mean that BP would have to basically reduce the amount of crude it is otherwise carrying around
right.
the Gulf. But at least in terms of the national emergency we're facing, BP ought to be using all of its resources. Now, in terms of its responsibility to its shareholders, BP may be saying, no, we're using as much of our resource as possible. That crude that we're carrying around the Gulf waiting for to be refined or waiting for the price to go up, we just have to keep it there. But no, it may be that in terms of the interest of the United States, BP really has got to do much more. And the same is true, Tom, with regard to information. I mean, we have the head of BP subsidiary in the United States saying right now mm-hmm. that there are not large plumes forming underwater, that everything that we know and all of the crude oil is on the surface. But many scientists from around the Gulf are saying, no, that's wrong. From what we can tell, there are huge plumes, a huge amount of oil is actually underwater right now. But unless the government actually takes control in terms of full federal oversight of BP, there is no way of knowing what the truth is.
Are you suggesting BP is trying to duck culpability, just denying the oil is there so it's legally not there, or they hope?
Well, I think that they are certainly looking for what they want to see and not looking for what they don't want to see. And I think that BP, naturally, because like any corporation answerable to its shareholders, is going to be somewhat concerned about public relations, BP is going to sift all of this through the kind of filter of what is good for our shareholders. This is appropriate. Normally, one would expect this. But this is not normal. This is a true national emergency. This is a devastating environmental problem the United States has right now.
Tad Patzick, do you see BP holding out something it might be doing here? We've got a lot of commenters on our Facebook page suggesting or wondering if BP is trying to preserve the viability of the well. There's a whole lot of oil down there, and that they're sort of, you know, resisting certain paths because it might cut them off from eventually harvesting that oil.
Well, okay, so the viability of the well is important for reasons other than exploiting the reservoir. That's just one well. The control of this well and preventing an uncontrolled spill around the wellbore, so essentially a crater
right.
bubbling with oil and gas way outside of the casing of mm-hmm. that well, mm-hmm. is of utmost importance. And that's the reason why this well should be produced, for example, through the choke and kill lines, which is what I've been suggesting for a month now, instead of trying to abruptly stop the flow and cause the flow to go elsewhere.
Because it could sort of blow up or crater the whole area around it and have more leakage, more gush.
Absolutely, and absolutely uncontrolled leakage. So many of the ideas that rely on abruptly stopping the flow in fact, do not take into the consideration the fact that the flow might go elsewhere and be even less controlled.
Antonia, and so you hear Bob's argument for getting the government in there in charge. Do you think that would have a material impact on the way this blowout's being handled?
I think the issue is what will – there's two problems. One is stopping the leak, and the other is dealing with the environmental and human costs and cleanup of the leak that is happening. In the latter, I think there is a lot more that can be done and is not being done by BP out of its concern for its bottom line. And that is where the government, the federal government, local governments, other expertise needs to be brought in immediately and would be done much more effectively if the federal government was in charge. On the issue of stopping the leakage, what we have to understand is that we don't know how to do that. And that is very important because it speaks to what needs to be done next, which is that we shouldn't be out there. So there's a lot of great ideas. I think BP is doing what it can do to stop that leak. Where I think BP is not acting as it should is in every other aspect of the cleanup, liability, responsibility, prevention. That's where we need federal and local governments acting instead of a corporation that is ultimately out to protect its bottom line and its reputation.
Robert Reich, I know we've got to let you go, but you know federal governments. Do you see Washington, prepping to take over, or is it just an idea they're going to let go?
Well, I think eventually, Tom, politically, the president is going to have no choice. Otherwise, this is going to look more and more like Katrina. But this, unlike Katrina, and even unlike Three Mile Island, continues to get worse and worse. By Friday, the expectation is that the crude starts washing up on Florida beaches. Florida's economy is enormously dependent on its tourist industry, and Florida politically is terribly important. The plume, if it continues to get larger and larger all the way through July, the company is now saying it can't do anything until August. I mean, can you imagine the president simply waiting on the side and saying, well, I'll find out what's going on, and I'll report to the public, and I'll do the best I can.
And who knows if it'll work even then.
But I want to just get back to a comment that was just made, Tom. Last Saturday, Stephen Chu, who's the Secretary of Energy.
Nobel Prize winner.
And he's a Nobel Prize winner from the University of California, Berkeley, incidentally. He and his team of scientists decided that the top kill effort that BP was making to try to plug hole this hole was very, very dangerous. In terms of the public's risk, the risk of the public, it was just greater than any potential benefit.
Because it might crater the whole wellhead?
That it would destroy the whole wellhead. That there was a chance that it would destroy the wellhead. And apparently Stephen Chu communicated to BP, and the administration said to BP, that is too dangerous. We strongly recommend that you stop doing that. BP then halted its top kill operation. But why should, and this is what concerns me. Why should the government that is answerable directly to the people be in the position of recommending to a for-profit organization, entity that is answerable to its shareholders, what it should be doing when, in fact, its expertise could be utilized directly for the public purpose?
We've got a web comment here saying, they're going to shout socialism. A web commenter says, Bob, if you put them in BP in receivership, as Mr. Reich suggests, can you hear the shouts of socialism that will come?
Well, first of all, if we can take over General Motors temporarily and AIG to make sure that they're solvent, we can certainly take over temporarily the American subsidiary of AIG to make sure that it doesn't wreak environmental havoc and damage on the United States. Secondly, many of the same people who are worried about, who are sprouting the word socialism are the people who have a very expansionary view of presidential powers when it comes to national defense. Here we have, again, a national disaster in the making.
Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary, author of Super Capitalism, joining us from Berkeley, California. Robert Reich, thanks very much for being there.
Thanks, Tom.
Tad Patzick, you say choke and kill lines are your number one suggestion. What does that mean? Is that a way to gradually choke off the flow so you don't blow out the blowout?
Well, so first of all, remember that there is a lot of deep and wide expertise within the industry outside of BP. And in fact, that expertise was used in the recommendation by DOE.
Second of all,
Stephen Chu, yes. And second of all,
as I said before, whatever you do, you don't want to damage the integrity of the wellhead and the BOP even further. So producing oil through the 2-3.5-inch lines that were hooked up for the top kill would actually alleviate some pressure from the wellhead and make other operations, such as cutting off of the marine riser and lowering that marine riser package onto the top of the BOP.
Blowout preventer.
Easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, blowout preventer, easier. And so what we're trying to do is trying to apply sort of medical principles of not hurting the patient, avoiding hurting the patient as much as we can, while doing whatever we can to capture as much oil as possible while we are drilling the relief wells.
We've got listeners saying, what about doing something like, what is it? Is it angioplasty? What is it when they put a balloon into arteries and then gradually, expand it? Why could that work? They're saying, could we put a bladder, force it down that tube, and then gradually, blow it up, inflate it until it stops the thing?
Right. Well, this idea is, in fact, widely used in the petroleum industry. It's called the inflatable packer. But again, the problem is that if you stop this flow in one place, the flow is going to go elsewhere to the compromised casing and is going to blow up somewhere else on the sea bottom.
This casing that goes another 13,000 feet down, as Antonio was saying.
Right. And in fact, suspicion is that the safety rings around the 16-inch casing, one of them is broken, and between 16 and 18-inch casing, and there may be a leak through the bottom or the shoe, the base of the 22-inch casing.
They've been trying to cut and cap. Here's the latest report saying that the pipe cut is irregular, so it's going to be challenging to get a cap on down there. We've got a lot of callers. Brian in Boston, you're on the air, Brian.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, what do you know?
Well, my stepfather's an engineer, and he's actually suggesting something very similar to your panelist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a choke-and-kill method, and he's contacted BP, and they have neglected to get back to him. And I know that there are other experts, but it seems like they are not doing what they should to stop this problem. And it's almost like BP should stand for big problems, not petroleum. British Petroleum.
How did he try to get through, Brian? I mean, it must be difficult. We heard they had something like 70 operators taking calls and 78,000 suggestions. I mean, that is a wave for them to handle.
It is. I won't deny that. But if you have a massive problem, I mean, look at this is basically bleeding, and you're trying to stop a patient from bleeding to death, and it's causing massive catastrophes on the Gulf Coast and just massive other issues that your other panelists talked about. But if it was that important to them, they would take those calls and decipher the good suggestions from the bad ones to ultimately get the best solution for the problem. If you're
Brian, let us pick it up. Our time is short before the break, but Tad Patzik, do you think that the brain power of this nation is being effectively funneled toward this problem?
Well, this is actually a very interesting comment and question by the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to the essence of issues that are surrounding this program. And the essence is the issue of complexity, technology, and science. This well and the system which it contacts is an essentially complex system. And it's very difficult for us to, one, understand, and two, control that system. And so many of the sort of narrow fixes or elements of fixing disregard other elements that are linked here or are interlinked in that system that may actually go bad or worse.
What does that mean, though? Leave it to the experts. The experts haven't solved it. At least BP's experts haven't solved it.
Well, again, I would like to warn you is that there are no dramatic quick fixes here.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that we can capture as much of the oil oozing or actually not oozing, being ejected
gushing
from this well,
yeah.
gushing from this well, and we can intercept this well with relief wells as soon as we can and stop the flow altogether, there probably won't be anything else coming up.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about drastic measures for the Gulf of Mexico and a country really desperate to find a way to fix the spill, to try to fix the spill. Tad Patzik joins us. He's chairman of the Petroleum and Geosystems Engineering Department at the University of Texas at Austin. And Antonio Yuhas joins us from San Francisco, author of The Tyranny of Oil, and just back from Louisiana. Ned in Charlottesville, Virginia. Ned, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have two comments. First of all, I think you can capture the oil in the water using oversized parachutes. I've done this in a pool. The oil is lighter than the water. It rises just as air does.
So this is kind of like Tad Patzik's umbrella idea, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's better than umbrellas, though, because these are soft, and they would be made out of nylon or Kevlar, which does not compress and is unaffected by the cold of the deep ocean. The Air Force has huge, I mean, unbelievably large parachutes. They can support an entire missile coming down in the air.
So what, sink a whole lot of them around the blowout site? Ned, let us pick it up. Tad, what do you say?
Well, the problem with the parachutes is that they act in the opposite direction. That is, the pressure is from below going up. And the weight is down below the parachute. Here, the parachute will be suspended in water while the pressure will be acting up, so it will try to invert the parachute. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be some other contraptions to keep the parachute, such as ring around it, to keep it open and collecting the oil. So the ideas are not all that different. And yes, I agree. These ideas need to be tried, and most of the oil, by buoyancy, will rise in water. When oil is dispersed in very fine droplets, which have surface active regions, then these droplets rise very slowly. And that gives rise to these possible plumes that are inside the Gulf of Mexico, rising ever so slowly and being carried away by the current away from the spill.
How long would your umbrella take to deploy? You describe a kind of giant umbrella solution to focus and funnel those plumes. How long would that take to get to have an effect, Professor?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking the listener. This is not immediate. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to deploy a giant vacuum cleaner and try to influence the way the plume is rising up in water and essentially refocus the plume. And so this is not an overnight solution, but however, potentially it should be able to capture a significant amount of oil, and then we can part this oil away from water, in various separation.
Antonio, given the terrible, terrible price of this, why wasn't there an overnight solution standing by here? I know the blowout preventer was supposed to be that, but that wasn't nearly sufficient, as it turns out. Why wasn't there a backup of some kind to the backup?
Well, we've had attempts at regulation that would impose backups to the backups that were lobbied against by BP and the rest of the industry to keep the Mineral Management Service from requiring not only additional backups but also appropriate environmental impact reviews to ensure that we actually knew what the danger of such a blowout would be, mm-hmm. and that we would have measures in place to address them. I think the issue, though, to hone in on at this point is one. Just to be clear, we have a leak happening right now. It's a leak from a pipe. What we don't want to have is a blowout. There's the potential for a gusher. Right now, we have it seems shocking to say, a little problem. What we could have is a massive problem, which is a gusher.
The so-called crater around the wellhead that Tad describes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
A significantly bigger problem at hand. And probably the most important conclusion to draw from this particular problem is that there weren't safety measures put in place because there aren't any. We do not know how effectively to address this problem because of the depths at where it has taken place and the fact that the industry did not prepare and the technology was not available. Now we have the problem of the cleanup. And one of the biggest problems that's now been highlighted is the issue of dispersants. The fact that this chemical dispersant is being used to spread the oil out. And basically the only benefit of the use of the dispersant, I would argue, is to make it look like we don't have as big of a problem as
sort
we have.
It disguises the
problem. And what would be better is if we could do what Thad has been talking about, which is to be able to actually pool the oil, keep it as it is in its current form, being able to pool it and pull it out. What we know for sure of the dispersants is that they are making anyone engaged in the cleanup ill, that they are that it's a toxin that is most certainly affecting marine habitats, is most certainly affecting long-term viability, and isn't helping us address, again, this latter problem, which is what do we do now that the oil is out, as opposed to how do we stop it? And I think what listeners need to hear is there is no easy fix. It's not that BP and I am the last person to defend any oil company. It's not that there's some magic fix that BP isn't doing for some sinister reason. It's that there isn't a magic fix, and that is the problem that we are facing.
I don't think anybody believes there's an easy fix, but the price is so high, people want some kind of fix, Ted.
Right.
Well, so in fact, I did not expect to agree with Antonia on so many points, but we do. And so reasonable people can actually agree on many things. So let me just comment on a few things. Yes, as I said as well, there are no quick and easy fixes. Also, it is not true that the physics and mechanics and chemistry behind that well are poorly understood. They're extremely well understood. It is true, and again, I'm not here to render judgment on BP's procedures. They will come out in court proceedings. I think that there was a significant element of human error and disregard for safety procedures, and which are clearly defined and very well known. And in fact, just as we were saying, 53,000 wells were drilled offshore and 3,000 in water as deep as this one, and there was just one blowout here and another one in Mexico, Ixtoc 1. All major spills, other than that, in the ocean were caused by ships breaking up, colliding, breaking up for whatever reason, and also by human action, such as the Arabian Gulf spills.
None of that is comforting in the least now.
Not at all.
I mean, the Gulf of Mexico is going away as a viable, planetary organ.
But
I want to hear from our listeners. They want to talk. I'm waiting for your point.
Yes. Well, my point is that industry actually knows what to do.
Kind of.
Yeah. Hey, I'm gonna cut that right there because I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that. Lewis in Windsor, and you haven't either. Lewis in Windsor, South Carolina.
Yes. How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Yes. We got all these engineers and think tanks going on. The problem we've mainly been having is with the how deep it is and the temperature of the environment. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we just try to use the environment, pump some fresh water down into the pipe, and if need be, some liquid nitrogen, and freeze the fresh water to plug the pipe?
Could we do it? We've got other suggestions along that line, Tad Patzik. Liquid nitrogen, get it down there. Is it possible to lower the temperature of petroleum to a point where that makes it sluggish or stop?
Well, again, that needs to be thought through, because water, when it freezes, expands. And water expanding in a confined volume, such as in a bottle, would break the bottle. And also, in a very low temperature of liquid nitrogen, steel becomes brittle. So, again, this is a very good idea, which would have to be very thoroughly analyzed before deploying it, so that we do not kill the patient.
Don't
Although
make it
patient
worse.
Is pretty dead as it is.
Yeah. Nellie in Freetown, Massachusetts. Nellie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I want to thank you for your opening statement about the former CEO of Shell Oil. I, too, was wondering why they weren't using their tankers, and I think Robert Reich answered that question.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is EU and Canada, who have much harsher oceanic conditions have offered repeatedly to help. Now, I understand that BP is trying to salvage the oil. Why don't we do it from a management point where BP gets to do whatever they're doing salvaging, but they are required to work with the other oil companies? The media can put pressure on them by simply checking to see what their insurance liability and how their risk management is written, which would defray some of BP's costs.
But get some more hands on deck here, Nellie. Let us pick that up. Antonia, are we not tapping all the global expertise that might be tapped here? Canada, the EU, beyond it, even other oil companies?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we know. And again, that's where the lack of transparency comes in. I know that definitely there have been a number of government panels that have been pulled together, and I know that the other oil companies have been offering their expertise, and as the listener, as the caller says, other countries have been offering their expertise, but at the end of the day, we don't know. There's an extreme lack of transparency on the part of BP, and if we can force an opening of information, then we will know better who's at the table and what ideas are being offered. And again, this also comes in not just with foreign governments, it's the local expertise, as the previous caller had said. There is a tremendous amount of knowledge, but people who live at the coastal zones, people who have been working on these issues, for generations, that also is clearly not getting into, is not filtering up to BP. And we need, all hands on deck to make sure, I think most importantly, that we are putting in place the measures that are needed to protect the wetlands, to protect the environment, to make sure that we lessen the impact as the spill continues, which it most certainly will through August, and will most certainly be made worse by storm season, which has begun.
Right, but we read this morning, we've only got 100 miles of boom down there and hundreds of miles of coast. Talk about local expertise. Here's a Louisiana Parish President Bill Nungesser on NPR News this morning, saying they need more workers and technology to wage the battle.
If we don't throw everything at this, including the kitchen sink, the only fish we're going to have is the pictures we have of the past, because it is destroying mile by mile all of South Louisiana, and is an absolute disgrace.
There's a voice right from the coast. Let's go to Clarksville, Tennessee. Tracy. Tracy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. This is Tracy Lehman. I have an idea for containment, actually, of this thing.
Okay.
Take a lead ring or maybe bismuth, something very heavy. You perforate it.
Mm-hmm.
You sink that to the bottom where it goes through the mud, seeps down on the hard shell surface. Then you have a parachute-type material, that type thickness, that is non-oil permeable.
Mm-hmm.
You have a ring of floats attached to that as you sink it. You get to the bottom, you release the floats. The floats float up to the surface with a 5,000-foot sheeting that totally encircles the leak.
Yep.
That way you have the oil contained within this barrier. It can be pumped from the top of the ships until they can figure out a way to stop the leak.
How about that? A kind of shower curtain around it. And we've heard that. Tad Patzik, what about it?
Well, this idea is kind of similar to other ideas mm-hmm. that were discussed here in this program, and it all boils down to being able to capture and refocus the plume and capture the oil in the most efficient way. And I think that these ideas absolutely have to be looked at and, if possible, deployed as quickly as we can. The fact of the matter is that the spill has now a tremendous impact on the delicate ecological systems along the Louisiana and then other states' coasts, and that needs to be alleviated and stopped.
Well, we see that, we know that, but why aren't we doing something like this already?
Okay.
I mean, is the pace of response sufficient?
Yes. My impatience is similar to yours. So what I think needs to happen, what has happened already is that the industry has offered help to BP. Now, whether that help was used or not, I don't know. I don't know. So what needs to happen now is that the government really keeps the information flowing to the public and the rest of the industry. The people from the industry who actually really know this environment do their utmost to help BP. And BP, in fact, is now bound to talk to the government and to the rest of the industry and to justify their decisions one way or another
with a group of experts. Let me ask you materially. Now we're hearing that these giant shears brought in after the diamond tip saw, it looks like they've worked. The pipe's been cut. They're lowering a cap that they hope they have on there in a couple hours. But, of course, that doesn't really stop it. We're still looking forward to the relief well in August. What are the odds of that successfully, completely stopping the free flow of oil into the Gulf, Tad Patsick, in August?
Again, there's nothing is certain in this life except for death and taxes.
I'm asking odds, not certainty.
Yes, but I would say the likelihood of that succeeding are very high. I wouldn't put them at 90%, but perhaps close to 90%. And this is not a one-step procedure. That is, even if that well does not work initially in the first 2 days or it with various other things that can be done, it will work a little bit later. In fact, in the Ixtoc well, it took ultimately 9 months to drill and intercept the blown up well and then cap it. And I certainly do hope that here we will be more successful and do it faster.
Are you resigned to waiting for that? Do you think we're going to just see this flow going on more or less at will until August or not? Maybe not today.
But remember, if we don't blow up the wellhead and the BOP, and if we capture the oil as of today or tomorrow or most of the oil, that is actually very good news because that oil is not getting now to the Gulf of Mexico. So this will buy us time to deal with the effects of oil that is already spilled.
Everybody watching, everybody praying for a solution here. Let it come soon and just as complete as possible. Listeners, thanks for your thoughts today, and thank you to each of our guests. Antonio Yuhas in San Francisco, author of The Tyranny of Oil. Thank you so much for joining us, Antonio.
Thank you for having me.
And Tad Patsick, Chairman of the Petroleum and Geosystems Engineering Department at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor Patsick, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.